You know, it's funny. You can offer somebody training, you know, then they're like, okay, I'd really love to learn that, but I've got to find the time to do it. But with Newsmatch, you get a little bit of money if you do the training, and it doubles the money that you raise.
Newsflash, the media industry is still struggling to crack the code on a sustainable revenue stream. But the nonprofit model seems to have legs and, coincidentally, can create a closer bond between a news outlet and its audience. I'm Michael O'Connell. This is It's All Journalism. January 8th, 2024, was Karen Rellett's first day as the executive director and CEO of the Institute for Nonprofit News. With a network of more than 450 independent news organizations across North America, INN is leading the nonprofit news movement. We gave Karen a few months to get settled in her new job before we invited her on the podcast, but here she is today. Karen, welcome to the It's All Journalism podcast.
Thank you so much for having me, and thank you for giving me a few months. I hit 90 days this week.
Oh, good. So you've figured it all out at this point. There are no surprises. You're cracking the code on that news revenue thing, right? That we've all been waiting to happen for like two decades. But anyway, congratulations on your new role. And so tell me a little bit about yourself. I know you were at the Knight Foundation before you came to INN. What got you interested in journalism? You know, what led to your current role?
Well, let's see. Let's start from the beginning, I guess. Yeah. So look, my mom got me interested in journalism because she was a newspaper reader. She was a CNBC viewer. And my family came to the US when I was nine. My family's from Jamaica. There was concern about the political direction of the country and there were safety issues. And, you know, we came to the US. And my mother told me we would learn the system. That's how she liked to describe it, the system, by staying current and reading the news. And that was just daily in our household. And so I really grew up viewing the newspaper and the news as a tool to understand the United States and to identify opportunity. I mean, I remember when it clicked for me that I could read an article and it would connect me to information about college scholarships. So that's sort of how it started. You know, high school newspaper. I was editor-in-chief. And then I worked as a journalist and manager for years in commercial television. I was a producer in New York and Atlanta. I worked for a major metro. I worked for the Miami Herald in my hometown. And there was a pretty robust public media partnership at the Miami Herald. The public media journalists actually sat and worked, and there was a full studio in the Miami Herald newsroom. So I worked on that partnership. And eventually I got to Knight Foundation, and that was journalism philanthropy, and I spent 8 years there.
So, you know, I think most of the journalists out there don't necessarily go into the philanthropy end of things. You know, what was it you learned from that experience?
So what I would say is, first of all, like Knight Foundation is headquartered in Miami. So I stayed in my hometown, and I discovered Knight Foundation really again from, you know, being a journalist, reading the news. And Knight Foundation in Miami was actually better known for its work to support the art. And in Miami, they were supporting at the time a technology ecosystem. And it's funny, all of that actually connects back to journalism in my eyes. But that's what they were doing there. And I was like, there's this energy around Knight Foundation. And I would look at the website. I maybe even did a story or two at some point where I intersected with their programs. So what you really learn there is, first of all, the greatest thinkers are coming to you with ideas about how to strengthen and reimagine journalism. I don't like to say save journalism at all. I really like to say strengthen and reimagine journalism. And the next generation is not necessarily using the word journalism, but we still need facts. We still need data. We still need trusted information. And it's good for communities. It's good for democracy. Anyway, when you're at Knight Foundation, all sorts of people are coming to you with ideas and you're an investor. And, you know, I came up in a time where we were thinking about the financial sustainability of the field. That was our focus. So you're looking at all these ideas and you're assessing them for risk. You're assessing them for potential. You're looking at teams. You're looking at their track records. You're looking at how they want to spend the money. And you're really trying to get, the way we did it, we thought about the return on investment. So if we invest this much money How are you going to demonstrate that you had a return on investment? And that's complex. So it was a lot about that, getting under the hood of these ideas and seeing what the money will do and how far you can make a dollar go.
That's really interesting because all those are perspectives that, you know, I guess are going to do a lot for, you know, how our industry moves forward. When digital sort of came to prominence and newsrooms were closing and people were still trying to hang on to display advertising in a commercial model, a lot of people sort of operating under the long tradition of the separation of the business side of the newsroom with the actual news section. But, you know, the deeper we get into this, it just seems so much that there has to be some sort of consideration, especially when we're talking about startups, you know, local startups, particularly focused newsrooms. Tell me a little bit about INN. I'm familiar with it, and I would hope that many other people out there, especially, you know, some people who might benefit from it. You know, what's its mission?
So the Institute for Nonprofit News, or INN as we call it, we help news organizations. We help them find their long-term financial footing. So we have 450 members, and those are newsrooms, and they're all nonprofit, which means that they are producing public service journalism. So that includes like your public media station in Charlotte, North Carolina, WFAE, or a national investigative powerhouse like ProPublica or Mother Jones. Or there's some smaller community newsrooms that you might not have heard of, but they're really doing innovative things. So Outlier Media in Detroit, Mississippi Today won a Pulitzer, or an organization like Benito Link. So INN, we're a trainer. We run an annual conference. We're a fundraiser. We're a force for good. And not everyone gets to be an INN member.
Oh, not everybody gets to be a member. What is the criteria, or who's the organization, or what's the organization that's going to succeed?
So we vet our members. We want to make sure that they're editorially independent, that they are indeed producing public service journalism. This isn't just like entertainment media. Then we're trying to also make sure that they're transparent around who's funding them. So it can't just be somebody who, you know, is a funder in bad faith, who's standing up an organization to, you know, pollute the internet with misinformation or something that's highly political and full of propaganda. These organizations are vetted, and INN membership is worth something. I would say it's at least half of the applicants that are not accepted.
Mm-hmm. And you sort of gave us a little list there of, you know, the things you're looking for. You become a member. When you're saying you're getting trained, what type of training are we talking about?
So I said before that we have a conference, but also too, all through the year, we're training organizations on fundraising. We are providing them information about collaborations. We run a rural news network. We have a phenomenal program called Newsmatch, where they get training to reach out to individual donors, and those donors donate to them, and then they get match dollars. And then there'll be conversations at our upcoming conference around, and there've been at conferences in the past around sponsorships.
So what are the advantages for a newsroom to being a nonprofit as opposed to, you know, some other form of, you know, financial backing?
Look, generally for-profit companies, they're providing a product to consumers and they want to make a profit by doing that. And that's fine. And a nonprofit organization, the mission and the purpose is to provide a service or benefit to the community with no intention of earning a profit. So when you see the name nonprofit, that means we are community focused. There's nothing wrong with being a for-profit, but you know that it's about a public good, the community's best interest. Nonprofit newsrooms are governed by boards and they answer to the community in that way. And it's a tax status and it's working in a lot of communities, but there are now for-profit companies pursuing philanthropy. They are pursuing grant funding that used to be, you know, more exclusively reserved for nonprofit outlets. Look, nonprofit newsrooms have been around because we've had public media. It's been around since the late 1960s.
So you mentioned Newsmatch. Can we talk a little bit about that? You actually had a pretty big milestone at the end of last year with that.
Sure. Newsmatch is a program where, you know, it's funny. You can offer somebody training. You know, then they're like, okay, I'd really love to learn that, but I've got to find the time to do it. But with Newsmatch, you get a little bit of money if you do the training, and it doubles the money that you raise. So what happens is you can get a certain amount of money if you learn how to fundraise. And if you go out and achieve that fundraising, you will get match dollars. And it's been really powerful because newsrooms are able to have a conversation with their audiences, their communities, with the everyday people, with residents, and they're able to make the case for why journalism is important. I mean, journalism has to solve a problem for audiences. And so they're able to do that. And the program's been going on for 8 years, and it's been successful in terms of helping newsrooms bring in dollars to keep themselves strong. And it's also arming them with the tools to tell the story of why it's important to have fact-based information coursing through this country.
So does that sort of transparency, you know, the fact that the organization can show who's funding them and what their background is that also sort of designed to go toward the question of news reliability, trust in the media that you receive?
Absolutely. I mean, the thing is that the internet has placed, you know, the ill-informed opinion of your cousin and a cat video and a deep investigative report and the deeply researched academic report all on the same feed. Those are not equal, but they're coming through your feed and you're just seeing them all at the same time. And an investigative report, there's so much more to it than, you know, your cousin's ill-informed opinion. So I think that's a part of it, right? So at the beginning of INN was founded by investigative journalists. Some of them were laid off and they said, you know what? What we do really has to survive because it has impact in the community. It's really important that we keep an eye on, we keep a check on power. We keep a check on local government. We keep a check on how taxpayer dollars are being spent. So that's where it was kind of born from investigative journalists, but it's expanded. We have a lot of local news organizations that have joined, and basically they're covering, for the most part, three categories: municipal government, the arts or cultural event, and schools. And I mentioned the arts before, and basically arts and culture are kind of the things that connect us. We have to connect too. We can't just always be hearing bad news or disappointing things about our communities and our leaders. And so that's where we connect. That's how we come together. And then, you know, holding municipal government accountable and holding the school board accountable and reporting on daily changes for schools. Those are the three categories that people really want to know about in their local communities.
So the nonprofit model, is that scale, or is it just this works best in a small newsroom, maybe with a singular mission, or as opposed to something, you know, what we would see in the past is large daily newspapers?
I think that's a question that we're still really trying to answer. I wish I could tell you absolutely yes, but look, we have 450 members, and after 5 years, 90% of them are still in business. You know, they're able to fund their work, but 5 years in the arc of history, if you think about how long dailies were around, or, you know, 5 years is not that long. INN's been around for 15 years. 15 years, you know, we've been around long enough to, you know, see some proven models like the Texas Tribune, which is sort of always held up, you know, as one of the more successful models. But 15 years is not that long in the arc of history. It's still kind of early. I hate to say it, but it's still kind of early.
Yeah, Jeff Jarvis on the podcast talking about his new book last fall, and that was actually part of our conversation, was that we're much earlier in the digital transformation than a lot of people perceive. That the 20 years that we've been focused on, that's, you know, a blip. That digital media is going to be someplace else, you know, in who knows how long it'll take, but because it's still evolving. What are your biggest concerns about the current state of journalism and the challenges it faces?
So I also want to talk about things I'm excited about too. So I do think about audience all the time because more and more of these are popping up. And it's interesting, you know, it used to be the journalist who was laid off, who was like, this is still necessary for community. But I talked to publishers who said to me, Karen, I was just trying to find a good voting guide in my neighborhood. And the local paper was falling apart and I couldn't find it. So I got together with a couple of other concerned citizens. And next thing you knew, we spun up a newsroom, you know, and these are three-person newsrooms and with a freelance budget. Or I remember there is another woman that I spoke with and she was just going to public meetings. You know, she was just going to public meetings and writing a blog. And eventually that she ended up working with partners, getting some funding, and she did some pretty deep investigative work with some partners. So there's some accidental publishers out there just trying to get information out. There's a lot of noise out there. So long term, I mean, I'm thinking about audience all the time. That's what we're doing at INN. Some of these members, like I said, are very young in the work, and some of them have launched last year. Some of them are, you know, 8 years old. But if they're going to get on solid financial footing, they have to have an audience. They have to demonstrate impact. So the community that reads and listens to them and then ends up donating to them is really important. So I think it's also the INN members. Some of them are very well known. I mentioned Mother Jones. I mentioned, you know, some of the public media outlets like WFAE in Charlotte, but there's some of them that are very new and they're not that well known, and they're only going to have impact if they're read or listened to or viewed. So that's really important. So I would say audience is really important. And I think we've got to make a not just audience for the products, but also just like an awareness of how important this work is. I also think that we've seen a lot of success in the collaborations. When many organizations are reporting on one single topic, it breaks through the noise. We've seen that with the Rural News Network. And I've seen that, frankly, I saw that at Knight Foundation, things like Every Voice, Every Vote in Philadelphia, you know, some of the work of Resolve Philly also in Philadelphia, really powerful.
Yeah. Whatever they're putting in the water in Philly, it's doing some amazing things to the journalists there. I had a few interviews with people that there, Resolve Philly, just doing amazing things. You say you want to talk about exciting things. I do too. And actually, you know, as you were talking, I remembered last year I spoke to Ralph Yarr of the Kansas City Defender, which I guess INN presented an award with him last year. And
yes,
I tell you, the conversation I had with him, with the editor, the founder there, really kind of changed my perspective about the direction of news and actually how we need to think about things very differently, because he did not identify himself as a journalist. He identified himself as an advocate. And, you know, the longer you talk to him, you begin to understand that he recognized a need in his community and he created a product that served that community, that reflected what they needed. And, you know, he termed it advocacy, which, you know, I can tell you, when I started my podcast, some of the people that I interviewed, you know, 10, 12 years ago, I would get emails. Well, that's advocacy. That's not journalism. I think we're evolving into something different and better, I think.
We're absolutely evolving into something different. You know, I always say to anyone, you know, you need to be talking to somebody 10 years younger than you, 20 years younger than you, because the next generation is not coming up with this word journalism in the same way. They're using the word influencer, and some might think that's advocacy. Journalism always influenced, but it influenced by facts and deep, contextual, nuanced reporting. So, you know, that's a big part of it.
I mean, it's difficult to imagine, you know, what journalism or whatever this thing will be in 10, 20 years. And I like the fact that you say, talk to somebody who's 10 or 20 years younger than you, because that's kind of where my head has been.
I will say also too, like, if you're 30 years old, you should be talking to someone who's 10. I know that sounds crazy, but there are 10-year-olds on TikTok. I'm just saying that people are, their behaviors with media and content It's just very different. I mean, I have a 14-year-old daughter. I remember the day that she came to me and she said, "Mom, did you hear that there was seismic activity because of a Taylor Swift concert?" And I remember thinking, "That's not true. What?" And you know, it was like early in the morning. And I said, "Where'd you find that? Who's your source?" And she brings over the TikTok and she shows me an anchor desk talking about this. And I'm like, "Oh." And then, you know, I, like my Gen X self, I go and I Google the sources that I think are trusted. And I was like, "Oh, okay. All right, I see you." I mean, she's like, "No, it was on the news, really. It was on the news because it was TikTok, but she saw news anchors."
But of course, that's one of the challenges facing us about who should we trust, because there are people who deliberately put out disinformation or misinformation presented as news. And so one would hope that
Absolutely.
INN members, I mean, that's part of their, I don't say it's their mission, but that's part of what they do is, they show that they're a trusted source because they do the work. And hopefully they show their work as well, because I think that's a part of this hand in hand. But tell me, I know you said you wanted to talk about exciting things. What exciting things we haven't talked about? What is it that, makes you get up in the
Well,
morning and you're glad that you're working where you're working? Assuming that's the
so
case.
I think look, I would say that you are correct. You've already identified Kansas City Defender. You've already mentioned Resolve Philly. I think that there are grassroots organizations that are connecting with community in very different ways. The word advocacy, I mean, there are people who are pro the health of their community. I think journalism is like, we're pro facts. We're pro facts, okay? We're pro deeply reported work. So, I mean, it's not as though journalism doesn't have a set of standards and values. I think that these local news organizations, they have values and that they want to see a healthy community. And so, look, Outlier Media, well known in Detroit, really understanding that most people in Detroit get their information two ways, television or texting. So they started texting people. They started allowing the residents of Detroit to have regular old conversations with a journalist, get their questions answered. They collect the data around the frequently asked questions, and then they turn that into journalism and make sure it's distributed through partners that have larger audiences. Like, they're doing phenomenal work. You know, you can also talk about something as simple as like Bonito Link. Bonito Link is in California. People are coming to them and saying, "I don't understand what these election flyers say. Is this true or not?" And Bonito Link is fact checking election flyers. So basic, so important. And that's something where there's demand coming from the community. Help us. Be a journalist. Help us. So there's some examples like that.
I see a lot of hope in that. It gives me hope to see that the news is finding its audience and the audience it needs to serve, and is also giving voice to other people who haven't had that opportunity before.
You know, I think that there are random acts of journalism happening all the time. And I think that some people have decided to wear their cape on behalf of their community. And I don't know if there's a J on the back of that cape. It could be an I for information. I don't know. But I think there definitely is a reimagining. And, you know, I should have also, of course, mentioned City Bureau and documenters and, you know, training citizens, paying citizens to go and cover meetings. That's incredibly exciting as well. And I think, look, I think there are a lot more people producing information and journalism. You know, more people are coming into the tent. The challenge and what's keeping us up at night is how do we make this last? And that means business considerations, financial considerations.
And one of the things that, going back to the Defender as an example, I mean, basketball is a form of journalism in a sense that, like, they create a community event that gets people to identify them. And, that becomes part of their mission is to create these public events, at the same time establishing yourself as a resource. It's interesting.
I love that you know, pulled out sports because there are lots of cities that are like, we love to have a team in our community because they know it's an economic engine. It's a community binder. It's exciting. It's fun. It brings jobs. It brings attention to a city. It brings resources. I mean, you know, and the other thing about sports coverage, yeah, sure. It's what happened in the game. It's scores. It's personalities, but it's also business. It's also salaries and budgets and, you know, year round. I mean, when you're out of season, that's what's being covered, the business side of it. You know, I mentioned before the three topics, the three sort of coverage areas that local news organizations are doing: municipal government, arts and culture, you know, schools. Sort of in that arts and culture, community delights, you know, is sports. Like, everything can't be about like the bad news. It has to be like what unites us and how can we do better? And those are the other parts around schools and government.
What are you looking for INN to be doing in the next year or two? What do you see the things that you're going to be focusing on?
Well, we're actively fundraising for Newsmatch. So that's been a really successful program. And it's something that it's not promised. It's something that we fundraise for, you know, we fundraise for 8 years. So that's really important. Again, we're thinking about audience and how to increase audience for our members. And the other thing is we're 450 members now. In 2009, when we started, we were 27. So we're really trying to find ways to connect the members that are on similar journeys, you know, to find smaller tables for them to connect within our larger community and so they can solve problems together. So those are the three things in the next year that we're working on.
Karen, thanks for coming on the podcast. You give me a lot to think about. The Institute for Nonprofit News is a great organization and you do good work. And I constantly, you know, or I should say that the people I work with as we're putting this podcast together, we're constantly stumbling into somebody who's part of your network and we want to talk to them because they're doing amazing work. So you're in that atmosphere or whatever with them. You're an element in their periodic table, I guess, for the success of their journalism. Thanks again for coming on the podcast.
Thank you so much for having me.
You've been listening to It's All Journalism, a weekly podcast about the people who report the news. You can find out more about us and download past episodes at itsalljournalism.com. While you're visiting our website, sign up for the It's All Journalism newsletter. To make sure you don't miss an episode of It's All Journalism, you can subscribe to our podcast on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, SoundCloud, Google Play, Amazon, and pretty much anywhere good podcasts are found. If you'd like to help us grow our podcast, like and share our episodes on social media. Look for us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. It takes a lot of people to create an episode of It's All Journalism. Nicola Grisco is our audio producer. Amber Healy writes our web content. Amelia Brust is our booking manager. Steph Thomas manages our social media. Nick Dupre composed our theme music. Carolyn Bilevsky designed our logo. And I'm your host, Michael O'Connell. Thanks for listening.